All right, we're continuing our series on how to study the Bible, and we'll talk a little bit tonight about translations. We're going to talk a little bit about how to do the word study, and I'm rapidly wanting to get us into actually hands-on study. And so there's a lot of additional material that I want to present to you, but I want us to go ahead as quickly as we can to take a verse and try to tear it apart and look at it. And I've chosen the verse that we're going to look at in time will be 1 Corinthians 14:33 through 38. We're not going to look at it immediately tonight. This will really be the focus of the next lesson. But I'd love you to be familiarizing yourself with that verse, and we'll be trying to take that as our example verse to how you go about trying to figure out what a verse means. And that's a challenging one, but I think it's important. We did a little bit of introduction last week about how to use Bible tools, and the purpose of Bible tools is to speed up your study. We're not wanting to speed it up in terms of meditation and serious effort, but there are times, I know in my case, if I can get to a word definition more quickly, if I can get to pertinent verses more quickly, if I can get translations open more quickly, then that's what I mean when I talk about the value of Bible aids. And we finished last week's class by talking about how the most important thing you can be doing is reading. Reading, 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 reading. Because really, the goal is we want you to know the Bible, to understand the Bible. Your reading is going to determine how quickly you can understand if we're dealing with a context, what the context is saying. If you're referred to another verse in your study Bible, you should already know what that book is about and the context of that book. Now, if you're not there, that's fine. That's fine. We can help you there. But this is something, it's kind of like my sport of running. I've been a runner for 30 years. I go out and work out every afternoon I can. I love it. Every now and then, somebody much younger than me, they make the mistake of wanting to go out and, you know, let's work out together. And you know, and sometimes, not always, but sometimes, you know, that somebody who's never run or not done a lot of running, they're going to find out that I don't care how old or gray hair somebody is, if they're more practiced in something, you know, you just can't just jump in and do it. And I know we know that in physical exercise, but it's also true in Bible study that, you know, you got to be patient in your study. We talked about last week as well, if you don't have time to read, I know you guys are very busy. Listening to audio Bibles are good. There's free audio Bibles online. I have some great CDs that my son Nathan uses, and I like to use where I can listen to a chapter while I'm driving around doing other things. I know you guys with the iPhones and iPods and whatever, you know, you can also download MP3 files with Bibles. So be learning how to read the Bible, understand the Bible, be familiar with the context and the overall theme of the Bible. And the 1 Timothy 4:13 was one of the things Paul emphasized to Timothy in his teachings. He says, "Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine." And so, one thing I ask of you, and you know, if you run across things you don't understand, try to take note of that. In Bible reading, I don't recommend you get bogged down. If you don't understand something, then stop reading. But you know, it's good to read a good section and then take note of what you don't know for later for further study. So, now, let's talk about this. This is where I wanted to get to tonight. What translation should we use? I'm going to start off asking you, does it matter which translation we use? Does any of y'all care what translation we use? Let's say if I decided to hand out the Living Bible for everyone tonight, and that will be the Bible you use. Would any of you be bothered by that? Okay, here's what I want to ask. I'm going to first ask for volunteers, and I may just pick on you. Just point a finger at you. Why do you use the translation that you use? Who wants to answer that? Why do you use the translation that you use? Okay?
Because I believe that it is accurate.
What translation do you use? Let's first start there.
New King James.
The New King James is pretty safe. That's the one I use, so he's in safe territory here. Okay. So why do you use it?
Just from, I guess, what I've heard and also from reading it, it just seems to be pretty accurate, I don't know, translation. And also, I mean, among people I know, it's probably the most widely used, or it has been in the past. So it might not be the easiest to read, but it's just because of that.
Okay, let's keep getting participation here. Even if the same translation, I don't might care what, but let's talk about it. Why do you use the translation you use?
I use New American Standard.
Yes.
First off, just because that's what was given to me when I was really young. But as I got familiar with other ones, I like how New American Standard is accurate, of course. It's readable, but it's still got that kind of King James poetic language a little bit. It's not entirely just colloquial, and to me that makes things easier to memorize. And so I like that, and I like that's something else, but I can't remember.
Okay, all right. Why do you use the translation you use? And what translation do you use and why?
I also use New American Standard.
Yes.
Well, one thing about it that I've noticed, I used to use a New King James Version.
Yes.
And with that one, of course, it was wonderful and everything. But with this one, I've discovered that it creates a picture in my head and I can actually see what's going on in the different stories. More so than I used to, and I sort of have a better understanding of the stories, and I'm just like, oh wow, I didn't realize that, like when I read through the different things.
Okay. Yeah, my oldest son ended up, going to the New American Standard, and that's good, that's great. Any other? Yes?
When I'm studying, a lot of times I'll use Bible Gateway, because then I can switch in between versions, and but a lot of times I'll use the easy to read version or the NIV version because it's easier for me to actually stick to reading when I feel like I'm not reading a textbook. The antiquated language that's in like the King James a lot kind of is confusing. So
yes, excellent. Now notice here, I like all the participants are very comfortable with what they're doing. And that's a good thing. You're wanting to understand, and you want to have a translation you feel comfortable reading. Now, I ended up starting off here similar like that. I used to start off, I had a King James Version, and I had Good News for Modern Man, which was a paraphrase. And what I would do, I'd read the King James, and I'd struggle with it. And I'd go read the Good News for Modern Man, then I'd go back and go, oh, okay, And I'd have different ones, but you want to understand. There's great weaknesses in a paraphrase, but I'll tell you what, you could use a paraphrase with a good translation that you're having trouble understanding. It's a tool. There's nothing wrong, even the Living Bible, which has great falsehoods in it and things where they pervert Scripture. But it can be used as a tool in getting the overall meaning of a verse. So don't be afraid to use other translations. Don't be afraid to explore in these areas. I really do recommend that you become a good Bible reader, that you be comfortable in reading and understanding. And you may have to start off with, like I say, I started off with what I would consider a foundational, good translation. I had a tough time reading, and I went to what would not be a translation at all, a paraphrase. Or you can use NIV and others. And so there's different ways to do this. Don't be afraid of the translations. We could talk about the weaknesses of a translation. But I think there's a way to use them, okay? And so the key there is you need to be comfortable in your reading. Some questions we would ask about translations. Is a given translation accurate? I noticed that you talked about that. But I also noticed when you came back with the answer, because I was going to come back at you here on this one, when you said the translation was accurate, I think you came back and said, I've heard the translation is accurate. Because I was going to ask you, how do you know if your translation's accurate? What's that?
Hearsay.
Well, how can you know, though? I mean, now, sometimes it might be hearsay, and, I've heard it. I mean, my preacher said it was accurate or not accurate.
Go to the Greek.
What's that?
Go to the Greek and Hebrew and look at it, I guess.
You can go to original language. There's reviews. And by the way, I can give you links to reviews of translations that brethren have written. And what you can do is they'll say, okay, this translation really misses it here. Here's the original, and here's what they've done. And so, it's good to look at reviews and look at passages. That's one of the things, one of the first things I do with a new translation, I want to find their critics. And I want the critics to list all the things they see wrong with it. And then I go look at where they're criticizing, and I'll look and go, okay. Now, you know what I do sometimes when, without having read a critic? I know certain verses that I could go to and look at how they've translated a verse. I know certain verses that I've looked at that typically the bias of the translators will come out. Now, what do you do? If you find a translation that has a weakness, do we burn them? What do we do? We recognize where the weaknesses are. Okay? So, every translation has weaknesses. There's some that are very solid. There are some that are that have a lot of leeway that the translators have taken. And you need to know when they do that. Our goal is to look at the original language that was given and to be accurate to that. And that's the goal of a good translator. And there are challenges here. Now, here's some principles if you want to determine the worthiness of a particular translation. So first off, understand a translation is not the Word of God. It is a translation of the text. And translators are not inspired of God. And if they do their job, you get the Word of God. If they don't, then you got to figure out where the weakness is. So any inspiration, it cannot claim the ones who translated any inspiration. Any translation cannot claim the translators are inspired. Did you know some people say that? There's a group today that would say there was a certain group of translators that were inspired by God. You know what version that is where people generally take that? King James. There are some, because they don't like any of the other versions, they actually have taken the position that the King James translators were inspired. They weren't. I think they did a good job. Now, if a translation is done accurately, we do not lose the original meaning, as some claim, but rather gain it. Okay, point three. The clear, understandable English is desirable. It should not be gained at the expense of truth, or as has been done with most modern versions. What good is clear, understandable English that does not translate the truth? So again, you know, we've had comments, and good comments. I commend the comments. I advise people to do that. Find you a translation you can understand. Learn where its weaknesses are. And we can spend some time, if you want to, in private, or I can give you material, or we can have extra groups and talk to you. Give me a translation, I can give you a list of weaknesses. And not necessarily all of them. Okay, here's a critical one. Let's see if I can find a verse where... 1 Corinthians 14:33. Let's open our Bible just for a moment here. And I want to look at a couple of different translations. 1 Corinthians 14:33, make a point. You may learn something you didn't know here. Well, we're about to make. 1 Corinthians 14:33. And I want different translations here. So let's start off with somebody with the New King James Translation. How about that?
For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints.
Okay, give me a New American Standard Translation. Who has that and would like to go ahead?
For God is not a God of confusion, but of peace, as in all the churches of the saints.
Okay, now, this, we've got two. One says, one, God is not the author of confusion, and God is not the God of confusion. Now, let me ask you this question in your two translations. Do you have any words in italics in the translation? What words are in italics in that verse? Author, what words are in italics in your verse?
A God.
Okay. Did you get that? If you looked at the two differences, one says author of confusion, and one says a God of confusion. And both words are in italics. Do you know what that means, class? That's right. It was not in the original text. The translator is saying, okay, here's the Greek, and there's a gap here. There's a gap that is implied. And so one group says God is not the author of confusion, other says God is not a God of confusion. And they really have the same meaning. But what the translators are doing here, because when you're translating from one language to the other, you've got to add some words, you know, in order to make it work. And so they added words, and they're telling you, hey everybody, when you read this and you see italics, ding, 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 we're adding words to give meaning. NIV. Anybody have an NIV tonight? How about reading that?
For God is not a God of disorder, but of peace, as in all the congregations of the saints.
Do you have any italics in your verse? None. Guess what the NIV doesn't do? They do not give italics to let you know when they've added. And I go, NIV, you should have done better than that. But they didn't do it. And so that's, again, I'm not saying not use NIV. I'll take NIV commonly, use it, and I don't mind studying somebody in NIV. You know, that's fine. But, yeah, you know, I wish they'd, you know, that's why I don't, one of the reasons I don't put NIV at my top list of what I would prefer for a study Bible. Not discouraging you who have it. Not discouraging it at all, okay? Does everybody understand that? Let me ask you, until tonight, how many did not know this until we talked about it tonight about italics? Excellent. That makes me feel good. Good.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, there are different translations and there are different adjectives or different, you know, added the or a or mm-hmm. different articles, but it's essentially the same meaning.
Essentially.
I mean,
sometimes,
anyway.
Sometimes it can make a huge difference.
Right.
And that's why... You got to look at other translations.
Right.
You know, that so, because in essence, what we just read, do we see any difference in these translations in meaning in this verse? No. But in other verses, it can make a difference. So, if that's, to me, that's exciting. Okay, this means this. And, oh, I had another translation going this way. Then I get my Sherlock Holmes hat out. Okay, it's time to investigate. It's time to start doing some word studies. It's time to start digging deeper. And whenever you can get that kind of mindset in the study of your Bible, you're going to be profited. You're going to run across things you never saw before. You'll gain a greater confidence in Scripture. So again, to me, contradictions, problems, difficult verses are great opportunities. Other questions? Keep going here. Number five, group translations are much more preferable than one-man translations because the one man would be more likely to impose his ideas, doctrines, and commentary upon his work, not being restrained or checked by the group. By the way, anybody know any one-man translations? I'm not sure, and I don't. My Living Bible may be one. Maybe. There are so that J.B. Phillips, I think he has a old, you know, he wrote it. And he's a good scholar, but I think Alexander Campbell had a translation that he did. So there are one-man translations. I'm not saying they're bad, but you know they're weaker than a group. Okay, most modern versions are the work of one man. For example, today's English version, Good Use for Modern Man, and the Living Bible. Okay, here it is in my text. Yes, that was a one-man translation. Okay. All right, we've talked about that. We've talked about that as well. Okay. Here's another question. Does a translation show a doctrinal bias? How many of you have seen a translation with a doctrinal bias? Well, let's look at a verse. Let's go to... Romans, and let's see, Romans 8, or Romans 7. Yeah, I tell you what, Romans 8 is probably good too. Let's do Romans 8, 3. Romans 8, 3. And again, I don't know what these other translations... I know what translation that has a bias, and we'll see if it's there. And I'm not trying to pick on one translation tonight, and I'm not, you know, don't want you to feel bad if this is your main translation. I'm not trying to discourage you here. But Romans 8:3, let's take New King James verse.
But the law cannot do in that it was weak through the flesh. God did by sending His own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh on account of sin. He condemned sin in the flesh.
Okay. Okay. Romans 8:3 and the New American Standard.
What the law could not do, weak as it was through the flesh, God did. Sending His own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh as an offering for sin, He condemned sin in the flesh.
Okay. And then NIV.
For what the law was powerless to do in that it was weakened by the sinful nature, God did by sending his own son in the likeness of sinful man to be a sin offering. And yeah. So he condemned sin and sinful man.
Okay, now, huge difference in the translation here. You might not have caught it. Okay, verse 3, for what the law could not do in that it was weak through the flesh. That Greek word sarx, the flesh. This translation says flesh. This translation says flesh. NIV says what?
Sinful nature.
Now, big old red flag. If you're not familiar with the doctrine of Calvinism, the very foundation of Calvinism is that all men are born totally depraved. And there's no good decision you can make unless the direct operation of the Holy Spirit comes upon you. You have a sinful nature. You are born lost. That's the new NIV consistently takes that Greek word sarx and they make sinful nature. I disagree with that strongly. NIV would have a bias toward Calvinism. Now, if you could understand what the word flesh means, then you understand when you see sinful nature. No, this is talking about the flesh. It's talking about the physical side of man. Are we born sinners? Are we born with a sinful nature? If we are, whose fault is it? Is it my fault that I have a sinful nature? You know, there's some definitions you have to look at. So again, to me, that's a bias. Some translations will show bias in other ways as well, but we'll pick up on those as we go. Unless any of you want to bring some out that you're aware of, that's one. And there's some other things like in NIV. I can think of some in NIV, like in 1 Corinthians 11, and there's other verses. But for another time, we'll go there. Not putting down NIV. I want you to understand that we just got to learn where the weaknesses are. So don't want to discourage anybody. Okay, here's a case of where he's looking at, I believe, the Living Bible. And the Living Bible, will teach faith alone. And you can look at that in the outline. Okay. Compare versions. Place weight on the more accurate versions. When there is a conflict in translation, you should use word studies to resolve any questions. Now, let me give you my opinion. Okay? Here's the list, the most accurate versions. Here's what I would give you, my opinion. King James and New King James, they would kind of go together. I think they're very accurate. Matter of fact, we don't have time to cover this in this class, but I believe the Greek texts that they're translated from are better than the Greek texts that the other translations are translated from. And that's kind of an interesting study that we don't have time to go to. Okay? Number two, the second category would be American Standard and New American Standard. American Standard is probably the most accurate translation regarding verb tense and accuracy of the Greek, but it is archaic language. If you have struggle with King James, you're going to really have struggle with American Standard. So that would be the high level I would have. And then below that, the NIV, the Revised Standard Version. There's a bunch of versions. I'll have to tell you, I don't have on my radar. I haven't digested. Some people may say, "Well, what's some of the latest versions that's come out that have been fairly popular?"
The Message.
What?
The Message.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. What's some others?
English Standard.
And ESV, and that's very popular. There were some very solid people. So that I haven't had a chance to knock that one down, look at it, and so that may be a real, really good one. I don't know. But that's some of the things you look at. Whenever there's a conflict, use a word study. Now, here I have borrowed some material. Matter of fact, Chris Reeves did this. I'm glad to see his name up there. I'm using his PowerPoint. And so now, how do you do a word study? And the remaining part of this class, we're going to talk about that. Remember, next week, I want you to be looking at 1 Corinthians 14, 33-38. We're going to spend the next class just breaking down that verse, looking at translations, looking at Bible definitions, running references. So anyway, get ready for that next week. Okay, if you're doing word studies, I hope you, a good, solid start would have a good Strong's Concordance. How many of you have Strong's Concordances or access to one? All right, that's good. All right. Now, The reason why you want to do word study is that the original Bible words oftentimes has a greater depth than just the English word. And modern versions may not have their accurate meaning. And sometimes there are transliterated words that it would be good to know the meaning behind it. Like the word apostle. That's from the Greek word apostolos. It's a transliterated word. Do you know what a transliterated word is? What's that?
Not an English word, so they
kind of
make one up.
They made one up. They didn't want to translate it. So, baptism. Why? Why didn't they translate? If they had translated baptism, if we had taken the Greek meaning of baptism, do you know how it would be translated?
Immersion.
Sprinkling. No. Immersion. You see. And that was the problem. That was hugely controversial. Back when the Bible was being translated, it would have been upheaval in political realms, in religious realms. Nobody immersed, hardly. And the King James translators goes, we're not going to touch that one. So we create a new word, baptism. Interesting, isn't it? It's very interesting how that works. Okay, you know, like the King James Version translates Easter in Acts 12:4, which should be Passover, and so that was kind of that's a glaring weakness. There's some other words that we could talk about, like peculiar in 1 Peter 2:9, scarcely in 1 Peter 4:18. Those words, if you look at the meaning and go to another translation, and you'll see a difference. Matter of fact, let's do that real quickly. 1 Peter 2:9. How about let's just do the New American Standard on that one, just for time's sake here. 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. When you get that, I'll... Sorry to pick on you tonight, but I know where they're at. Go ahead.
You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light.
Instead of peculiar people, a people for God's own possession. You know, we're set aside for God. And so what do we think when we think of peculiar? You know, somebody wearing an Alabama shirt to an Auburn game. Yeah, that'd be kind of dangerous, wouldn't it? Yeah. We tend to think of peculiar in another way. So that's important. Scarcely. Okay, well, let's go one more. 1 Peter 4:18. And this time we're going to take the NIV and we're going to show you where I'm sure they're going to be a good translation for this one. We want to give a plug in for that. 1 Peter 4:18. How about reading that?
And if it is hard for the righteous to be saved, what will become of the ungodly and the sinner?
Okay. So the point, instead of scarcely, the word hard. What's the difference? If you think of scarcely, if something is scarce, it's rare. So amongst the righteous, nobody's going to make it but a few of the few. Even you could be righteous, buddy, you still got a long ways to go. That's not, you know, why we sometimes we use the word. It's saying that if you're righteous, it's going to be a hard way. But it doesn't mean that the majority of people serving God or trying, you know, become Christians are going to fall. And so sometimes people could put that emphasis there. So there's an example where word studies and other things. Okay, now, if you're using the old King James, the Strong's, it's based on the King James Version, the old Strong's. There are Strong's versions based on NIV, New American Standard, so you've got different Strong's versions, but right now we're going to talk about the King James Version. In Acts 6:14, the word destroy is used. So the first thing you do in Strong's is you've got to go to the Bible verse that contains the word you want to study, and look that up, and you'll see that there's a number to the right. If we don't have Strong concordances here, so you just have to understand. You look at Acts 6:14, and you'll get the Strong's number for the word that you're looking up. And then when you get the Strong's number, there are Hebrew Greek dictionaries that are based on the Strong's number. And if you look at number 2647, then you'll get that definition. And when you get the definition, it's like here's a case here for that word destroy. You end up getting different definitions for the word. And you may not be able to read Greek, and that is a weakness in some of these these works, you almost have to look at Greek words and compare them. I remember when I first started doing this. Now, I've got programs now I can right-click on, and it pulls all this up, and I don't have to worry about it. But I can, you know. Anyway, the word here is kataluo. And you'll find out it's from two other Greek words that have been combined to make this word. It literally means to loosen down. Kata means down. It's a preposition. Luo means to loose. So to loosen down or disintegrate. By implication, to demolish, literally or figuratively. Specifically, when you compare to another word, sometimes it'll give you synonyms. To half for the night, to destroy, to dissolve, to be guessed, lodge, to come to naught, overthrow, throw down. So it's interesting as you take a word and you look at it and its possible meanings. Now let me give you a bit of warning. Greek study is fun. It's interesting. But you can create absolute chaos if you think you know more than you do. I've met a lot of people that try to hide behind the Greek and misuse the Greek. I'm one that I know enough about Greek to know whether or not you know Greek. And I know enough about Greek to find out whether or not you're perverting something. And so you want to be careful with the Greek. The Greek can give you additional depth, but it also can be used to deceive. And because you've got a list of definitions, that what definition is used in a particular context is going to be determined by the context. Here, we've got the Greek words there. There's transliteration. There's the pronunciation. There's the definition. And there's some of the translations that are used. So you got the definition, then it's separated from the translation. And that's important. If you look at Vine's dictionary, Vine's will do that. They'll give you the basic definition, and then he'll give you his commentary. Commentaries are good. I think Vine does a great job of their commentary, but sometimes they're wrong. And sometimes the translations in a given verse are not accurate in terms of what is really meant by that text. Okay, so you can do this. You get the Strong's numbers. You look at various other, you know, translations. Like here's Barry's Greek lexicon, Vine's expository dictionary. You'll get some information there from them. It's good to write down the different English words used to translate the original the Hebrew Greek word. It's like the word destroy. You get a lot of verses there where that is used. But the same Greek word can be translated dissolve. You'll have verses where that's being used. Sometimes it can mean to be a guest. Same Greek word. And so, again, it gives you some idea of the impact of a word, how a word is used. And I think that's interesting. You'll get a more depth of, you know, one thing you don't want to do when you're looking at Greek. You cannot take a definition of a Greek word and use it consistently to all the times that word is used. That's very, very rare. It's rare in English. We have English words that the context will determine the meaning. There's figurative usage and so on. And so that's another thing that it'll humble you as you begin to look at, you know, study of the original language. And so those are some of the definitions. Now, you know, here's an example, church. What does the word church mean? By the way, has any bell rung yet? Okay, good. Help me on that.
Gathering?
Huh?
Does it mean gathering or something?
Means an assembly. So, does it mean a building? No. It means a gathering. Now, people may gather at a building, but, you know, people are the church. Interesting. Baptism is a sprinkling. We've already talked about that. You know, by going through the definition, we'd understand the meaning of that. Pastor, is he the preacher? You know, as you begin to look at these words, the Greek definition helps you, but more the context in which the word is used would help you in understanding the meaning. I hope I haven't gone through that very fast, but, you know, you almost have to have these aids in your hands to be able to, for this to mean as much to you. How many of you have ever used the Strong's in conjunction with a Greek dictionary or Hebrew dictionary? How many of you ever done that? Okay, so many of you have it, and so that probably looked intimidating to you. Try it. Now, you may not have the tools to do that. You may not have those books that are connected. And so if you want me to help you, I can help you. I can help show you online where you can do this. I can help point you toward a Bible program that will help you do this. We have, I know in our library, some of these books. I would give you access to some of these books if you wanted to try to learn how to use them. Okay, questions. I know that we don't have much time left. Any questions? Okay. Anybody have another translation that we haven't mentioned that is your primary translation? I won't put you on the spot. Yes.
Yeah, ESV.
ESV. How have you found the ESV to be?
I like it. It's a lot like the New King James, really. I've heard a lot of people say it's an accurate translation.
Okay. Yeah, I really haven't heard any criticism of it yet, but give me some time. I'll find some places, you know, we'll do that. Because you really need to know. I mean, actually, that's kind of one of the things. If I'm driving a car, particularly a used car, you know, it has sometimes certain features, you know, things you can't fix becomes features. You know, and I'm driving, Nathan's car broke down the other day, and I ended up having to take out of my mothballs my old silver van where I've got the wind to take up. The door will not open. In order to open the door from the inside, I've got to open the back and then do like this. So it's one of these old man kind of vehicles where, you know, it's falling apart, but it's paid for. And it's comfortable. You know, and so, you know, I know what the features are in that, and it's the developing additional features as it goes along. I do have a do not resuscitate sign, you know, on the car. So, you know, when it does finally have another major issue, we'll probably go the way of all things. We had an older van that became our new car. It was reborn through the Cash for Clunkers program. So, anyway, I wish something else like that would come along. Was that second bell? Okay, thank you. Okay, remember next week, 1 Corinthians 14, 33 through 38. Be reading that. Do as much research as you can on it, and we're going to try to put all this together and how we do that, how we study that. Mm-hmm.